204 American soldiers have died in Iraq as a result of these lies.
I don't think that one dead terrorist is going to make our nation safer.
The secrecy and the obfuscation about what the administration was planning, the fact that no one had been consulted, even inside their own party, became, to us at least, quite compelling.
No order was given to restart the program, and even had such an order been given, Iraq would still have been many years away from producing a nuclear weapon.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, July 2nd, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. It's been 2 months now since President Bush stood on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln and announced the official end of the military phase of the Iraq War. U.S. military personnel have scoured the country of Iraq, but credible evidence of weapons of mass destruction, as the U.S. had claimed existed, has yet to be found. A Gallup poll conducted earlier this week for USA Today and CNN shows that almost 40% of Americans now say they believe the Bush administration deliberately misled the public about whether Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. More than half of those surveyed say that if this is proven, it would matter a great deal to them. Behind the scenes, activists led by former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark have organized a campaign calling for the impeachment of the president. They claim that Bush's unproven assertions about Iraq's alleged weapons constitute a breach of the public trust, a misuse of his authority, and abuse of his presidential power. Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois at Champaign, has even gone so far as to draft and propose congressional resolution of articles of impeachment. Peace Watch spoke recently with Boyle about his campaign, as well as with David Rifkin, who served in the Justice Department during the Reagan and Bush senior administrations. Rifkin's article, entitled Saddam, Nikita, and Virtual Weapons of Mass Destruction, A Question of Threat Perception and Intelligence Assessment, appeared recently on the website in the nationalinterest.com. We begin our conversation by asking Rifkin whether he was at all bothered by the administration's inability to find any weapons of mass destruction thus far.
The fact that we have not discovered a large stockpile of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq so far can be explained by several reasons. Most importantly, there is absolutely no reason to believe that that Iraq under Saddam Hussein did not pose a credible threat that merited a strong response, including military response. The basic reason for it is very simple. Aside from nuclear weapons that do take a considerable period of time to field and deploy, when it comes to chemical and biological weapons, you have an ability, in essence, to adopt what is known as just-in-time strategy. Namely, you can maintain an industrial facilities that can produce chemical and biological weapons with minimum of notice in the space of literally weeks. And you can do that, especially if you're planning to be the aggressor, the entity that uses them first, as Saddam Hussein was, precisely when you need them. There's absolutely no reason for you to produce them months and years in advance because of a possibility of accidents and possibility of deterioration. So the fact that we have not discovered an arsenal of hundreds and thousands of shells filled with chemical weapons in no way reassures me about Saddam's prior intentions and the threat that he posed.
Francis Boyle, you disagree, and you have gone so far as to draw up a congressional resolution calling for the impeachment of the president for lying about the reasons for war, have you not?
Yes, you can read it on counterpunch.org, January 17, 2003. And let me quote here from the Articles of Impeachment against President Nixon, Article 1, Section 8, quote, making or causing to be made false or misleading public statements for the purpose of deceiving the people of the United States, unquote. I think that is the situation that we have here today. They're not there. We've been there quite some time. We're still looking. We haven't found them. There's a major crisis now in Britain. Tony Blair or even government ministers are admitting that the evidence was manufactured. The lies that we're told are extremely serious. They've been used to produce a war. The president, it appears, lied to Congress in order to get a resolution on October 11th. There have been members of Congress saying that that was fraudulently procured. So I think the non-existent weapons of mass destruction have only strengthened the case I made in my original draft bill of impeachment on January 16, 2003.
And so, David Rifkin, how do you respond to Professor Boyle and other critics of the Bush administration who say that the fact that the weapons still have not been found would seem to indicate that they never existed in the first place and that British and American officials basically cooked the intelligence books to portray Iraq as a much greater threat than it actually posed and lead the country into war?
In all candor, I wonder if we're in the same universes. As far as the possibility, and a very strong possibility, that Iraq had deployed weapons of mass destruction, we're not talking about President Bush, who just made those assertions, or members of his administration. We're talking about both his immediate predecessor, President Clinton. We're talking about Bush 41. We're talking about UNSCOM, the UN Security Council. We're talking about an intelligence service of every major European country. We're talking about not just Mr. Blair, but his predecessor, President Chirac. I mean, two points are to be made. First of all, the fact that they existed is beyond any dispute. So Professor Boyle believes that there was somehow a conspiracy here. That conspiracy was wide-ranging indeed. It included virtually every senior member of the national security elites in every major Western and non-Western country. The dispute in the last 2 years was about what to do about the threat posed by Saddam's WMD programs, not whether he had it. So I am absolutely at a loss to understand what is the basis for ascribing these nefarious motives to President Bush. Then the facts indicate that he was one of the many people who believed on the basis of very credible evidence that this problem existed.
Francis Boyle, he's saying basically that it was not whether the weapons existed, but what to do about the threat posed by Saddam Hussein.
And everybody agreed with it, including the French.
Let me continue my point here. Of course, when this crisis began last August, those of us in the peace movement were saying these weapons were not there all along. This was just propaganda. And so far, we have been proven to be correct. I see no point in going through all the itemized details here, but right now they still have not turned up weapons of mass destruction. Even the Defense Intelligence Agency last September leaked a report saying we had no evidence. The CIA refused. Now, our position is these were deliberate lies, pretty much historically along the lines of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, that were being told to the American people to build public support for war and also to get authorization from Congress. And the non-existence of the weapons of mass destruction simply prove us to be correct. They're not there.
If I may,
they'll be found, but so far they're not there.
If I may, then Professor Bo, with respect, your theory is that every senior Western and non-Western official, every senior civil servant, including every head of the UN disarmament group, has been in this conspiracy, because every one of them, and unfortunately we don't have time, including people who did not want us to use force, every single one of them claimed and maintained that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction.
And
moreover,
every single leader of the peace movement were saying these were all lies,
well,
that the vast majority of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction had been eliminated no later than 1998.
It's useful for your listeners, excuse me, to appreciate. I agree with Professor Boyle's characterization of the leaders of the peace movement. But basically, what you're asserting then, you're not just trying to impeach President Bush, you're trying to impeach or accused of lack of integrity and lying. Every major international and national civil servant and politician in the last 15 years.
Well, right now,
including
what we are doing here is attempting to hold accountable President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, for waging an aggressive war against Iraq, a war in violation of the United Nations Charter, the Kellogg-Briand Pact, the Nuremberg Charter Judgment and Principles, a Nuremberg crime against peace, a preventive war that
just out of curiosity, did President Clinton not maintain repeatedly that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction? Was that not view expressed by Secretary Albright and every senior official of the Clinton administration?
Clinton had to say whatever he had to say to stay in power in his current Lewinsky scandal. I'm dealing with the events for the past year with the current crisis, where everyone in the American peace movement said the weapons are no longer there. They have been removed.
Okay. Did he not fail to account for thousands of liters of anthrax and numerous other chemical and biological weapons?
He did not expel the inspectors in 1998 in order to alleviate the pressure on him over impeachment. President Clinton basically ordered Butler to pull them out so that he could engage in Operation Desert Fox, which is a massive bombing of Iraq designed to head off a vote of impeachment in Congress. But let's get back to the current situation. We already have the Senator Rockefeller calling for an FBI investigation of the so-called Niger uranium that didn't exist. We have Waxman accusing the president of lying. So the bottom line is, so far, they have no weapons of mass destruction. The president, the vice president, the secretary of defense made numerous statements that they were there to get support for war, and they haven't been able to produce the evidence.
You're fundamentally convinced that this is not a case of intelligence being an art and not a science, while dealing with very complex intelligence indicators that these people just out and out lie, that they knew beyond doubt.
Just as the Johnson administration lied about Vietnam, I'm certainly convinced they lied about this from the get-go.
David Rifkin, how do you respond to the fact that the UN's weapons inspector, Scott Ritter, stated that before inspections were stopped, Iraq had been 95% disarmed?
I do not know Mr. Ritter. I do know that he's gone a process of conversion, where he used to be a strong critic of the Iraqi regime at a certain point in time in his career, took a different stance.
The U.S. and British troops actually went in, and I think that most people want to know at this point, where are the weapons of mass destruction that Secretary of State Colin Powell went before the U.N. and made a very elaborate case that these weapons existed. I mean, he pointed
understand.
To
I understand
they
it.
Had
it's
photos.
A fair question.
Yes,
it's
a fair
are question, weapons? And I try to address that actually in my very first set of remarks. We need to look at the broad nature of the threat. It does not appear now that he had a lot of deployed chemical and biological weapons. With all due respect, this is not the issue, is whether or not he had ongoing programs. You can replicate.
But does a program represent a
threat?
Serious threat?
Of course,
a threat serious
a threat.
Enough for us to have to go in and to bomb the shock and awe
campaign?
I understand,
that we have? And this is very difficult for some people to understand. Unfortunately, we do not live in a world where we have a luxury. We're dealing with a rogue regime. We're not talking about warning periods measuring in years or even months. You can make a batch of chemical weapons in an average chemical plant in less than 45 days.
Have we even found evidence that there were these ongoing programs, which I think we're now hearing about ongoing programs, which is sort of an edited version of what the Bush administration was saying initially. It was saying that there were these weapons of mass destruction, that Saddam Hussein was going to, you know, he had used gas against his people before, and that he would likely, and even both sides said that if backed up against the wall, Saddam Hussein was likely to use gas. But we didn't see any of that.
That is correct.
This war.
The point I'm trying to make is that the nature of his programs turn out to be somewhat, in a very subtle way, different from what we expected. My point also is that it doesn't render it any less threatening.
Mr. Rifkin, of course, is advocating here this doctrine of preventive warfare, which was articulated by President Bush, Vice President Cheney, now the official policy, National Security Council policy. The problem with this doctrine, of course, was that when the lawyers for the Nazis at Nuremberg made a similar argument, the Nuremberg Tribunal rejected the argument of preventive warfare. So basically what we're seeing in the Bush administration is a Nazi doctrine of international law being adopted as official governmental policy of the United States of America, which, by the way, was what originally propelled me into drafting my articles of impeachment and setting up the national impeachment campaign that I did. But again, for the record, those of us in the peace movement since this crisis started last August have been saying all along that these were lies about weapons of mass destruction. They were not at that time there. They have not been found. And what we have said has been proven to be correct.
Probably one of the most compelling pieces of evidence of Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction was a report that suggested that Iraq was attempting to acquire uranium from Niger. It was revealed after Congress had signed over war powers that these documents were actually forged. And intelligence experts have revealed that back in 2001, when these reports first surfaced, that Vice President Cheney's office requested that these allegations be checked out. Now, the U.S. ambassador responsible for this investigation reported that he found nothing to substantiate the report. Is it reasonable to believe that the president or Secretary of State Colin Powell were not aware that these reports were without merit?
I would say that intelligence business is full of ambiguities, is full of instances where evidence that looks probative and meritorious does not check out. All I can tell you, it is ironic that we simultaneously in this country have an investigation of a so-called intelligence failure of September 11, which is inability to appreciate in the absence of compelling evidence, subtle indicia, subtle pieces of evidence that point to a horrendous possibility that people will fly airplanes into buildings and kill thousands of Americans. So that we have an intelligence community that underconnects the dots. And simultaneously, can only happen in Washington, only driven by partisan politics, we have an investigation because of people overconnecting the dots. To me, the fact, and I'm not familiar with the details of the Niger uranium controversy, but let's stipulate for purposes of your listeners that this is absolutely false piece of intelligence. So what? I cannot think, being a student of foreign and defense policy, in the last 20 years, if you look at, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis, you had two-thirds of the intelligence community maintaining that the Soviets would never place missiles in Cuba. And you had people maintaining that in 73 war, because of Israeli military superiority, the Egyptians and the Syrians would never attack them. I mean, if I had 2 hours, I would go on and on and on about numerous instances where intelligence community failed to appreciate a threat that materialized. So here we have some piece that doesn't fit. You do not need to resort to the theory that senior officials, including the president and vice president, cooked the books or were bad or evil.
Well, if the president authorized, if the president authorized the misrepresentation of this fact, doesn't that that rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors?
The key thing is, if there's no basis to believe at all that the president or anybody else has authorized it.
Francis, well, we know for a fact that Paul Wolfowitz set up his own specialized intelligence there in the Pentagon to go out and manufacture evidence best he could.
That is your assertion, sir. Manufacture evidence is a strong term.
Seymour Hersh has the story in the New Yorker. You can read that. There are many other sources. The so-called neocon cabal in the Pentagon that was pushing this war.
And you conceive of no other possibility that people genuinely wanted to have a diversity of opinions in the intelligence community? Are you not aware that there have been many instances, including assessment of Soviet defense buildup, particularly the development of Soviet strategic forces, where the CIA has been grievously wrong in terms of underestimating the threat? Again, we're in the middle still of September 11 investigation where CIA supposedly was asleep at the switch.
Paul also was the one who originally recommended to the president, even before he came to power, a war against Iraq, and a war which we in the peace movement have been saying all along was about oil, not weapons.
Right.
Clearly what it's about.
Let's stipulate, and again, we're not in a court of law, but let's stipulate for a second that you had some people who genuinely believed that Iraq posed a serious strategic threat, and they came in with this view. How does that prove that these people dishonestly cooked intelligence and lied? Then there's so many other far more credible explanations as to what happened. Again, I've not heard you respond to this point. We are accusing, or at least some people, perhaps not you, the U.S. intelligence community, including the CIA, of being asleep at the switch, of not taking the threat seriously in September 11. Is it not somewhat implausible a couple of years later to accuse the very same intelligence community of overestimating the threat?
Well, actually, all our intelligence agencies and President Bush did, in fact, know something was going to happen as of August 2001, and we still don't know why the CIA, FBI, DIA, and everyone else did not act, and the Bush administration, the president, did not act to prevent September 11th, and the report is still being covered up.
So I
can't say I have any confidence at all in what the CIA, FBI, or any of these other intelligence agencies did. We've been through a history of lies for the purpose of waging illegal and aggressive warfare, certainly in my lifetime, going back to Tonkin Gulf and the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the former President Richard Nixon resigned just as Congress was preparing to impeach him for misusing the CIA and the FBI. How do Bush's actions compare with the actions of Nixon, Professor Boyle?
Personally, I think far worse. Nixon was not accused of waging an aggressive war against another state in the final articles of impeachment, if my memory serves me correctly. What we are alleging in our articles, which, by the way, are in circulation now on Capitol Hill and are being under consideration, is that the highest-level officials of the Bush administration, including the president, the vice president, the secretary of defense, got together and decided to wage an aggressive war against Iraq, a Nuremberg crime against peace, and concocted whatever evidence they had in order to sell this to the American people as part of a public relations campaign, and in the process lied to the American Congress in order to get a resolution that on its face appeared to authorize force under certain conditions, which, by the way, the Bush administration never really fulfilled in the first place.
David
so this
Rifkin,
is far more serious, and I should point out, so far now, 204 American soldiers have died in Iraq as a result of these lies, and the best anyone could tell is somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 Iraqi civilians have died, and we have no idea how many Iraqi military personnel have died.
Francis Boyle is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois at Champaign. He's drafted a proposed congressional resolution of articles of impeachment. Also joining the discussion was David Rifkin, who served in the Justice Department during the Reagan and Bush senior administrations. Rifkin's article entitled Saddam, Nikita, and Virtual Weapons of Mass Destruction, A Question of Threat Perception and Intelligence Assessment, appeared recently on the website in thenationalinterest.com. As more and more U.S. troops die in Iraq each day, the U.S. Congress, in closed-door sessions, is examining the question of whether the Bush administration used undue influence over the intelligence community to slant intelligence information to support invading Iraq. Ray McGovern was a member of the CIA for 27 years, and he served as the all-intelligence agent during the Reagan administration. He was responsible for briefing the president, the vice president, joint chiefs of staff, the cabinet, and national security advisors. He's now part of a group of former intelligence agents who are so dismayed with the intelligence used to support going to war against Iraq that they formed a group called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS. In this commentary for Peace Watch, Ray McGovern points to an unusual pattern on the part of Vice President Dick Cheney to visit the CIA headquarters, which he did 27 times prior to the invasion.
As though this were normal. I mean, the repeated visits Vice President Dick Cheney made to CIA before the war in Iraq. The visits were, in fact, unprecedented. During my 27-year career at the Central Intelligence Agency, no vice president ever came to us for a working visit. During the 80s, it was my privilege to brief Vice President George H.W. Bush and other very senior policymakers every other morning. I went either to the vice president's office or on weekends to his home. I'm sure it never occurred to him to come to CIA headquarters. morning briefings gave us an excellent window on what was uppermost in the minds of those senior officials and helped us to refine our tasks of collection and analysis. Thus, there was never any need for policymakers to visit us. And the very thought of a vice president dropping by to help us with our analysis is extraordinary. We preferred to do that work without pressure, the pressure that inevitably comes from policymakers at the table. Cheney got into the operational side of intelligence as well. Reports in late 2001 that Iraq had tried to acquire uranium from Niger stirred such interest that his office let it be known he wanted them checked out. So, with the CIA as facilitator, a retired U.S. ambassador was dispatched to Niger in February 2002 to investigate. He found nothing to substantiate the report and lots to call it into question. And there the matter rested until last summer, after the Bush administration made the decision for war in Iraq. Cheney, in a speech on August 26, 2002, claimed that Saddam Hussein had, quote, resumed his effort to acquire nuclear weapons, end quote. At the time, CIA analysts were involved in a knockdown, drag-out argument with the Pentagon on this very point. Most of the nuclear engineers at the CIA and virtually all scientists at U.S. government laboratories and the International Atomic Energy Agency found no reliable evidence that Iraq had restarted its nuclear weapons program. But the vice president had spoken, and sad to say, those in charge of the draft national intelligence estimate took their cue and stated falsely that, quote, most analysts assess Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program, end quote. Smoke was blown about aluminum tubes sought by Iraq that, it turns out, were really for conventional weapons programs. The rest amounted to things like Hussein's frequent meetings with nuclear scientists and Iraq's foot-dragging in providing information to UN inspectors. Not much heed was paid to the fact that Hussein's son-in-law, who supervised Iraq's nuclear program before he defected in 1995, had told interrogators that Iraq's nuclear capability, save the blueprints, had been destroyed in 1991 at his order. Documents given to the United States last week confirm that. The Iraqi scientists who provided the documents added that, even though the blueprints would have given Iraq a head start, no order was given to restart the program, and even had such an order been given, Iraq would still have been many years away from producing a nuclear weapon. In sum, the evidence presented in last September's intelligence estimate fell far short of what was required to support Cheney's claim that Iraq was on the road to a nuclear weapon. Something scarier had to be produced, and quickly, if Congress was to be persuaded to authorize war. And so the decision was made to dust off the uranium from Niger canard. The White House calculated correctly that before anyone would make an issue of the fact that this key piece of, quote, intelligence, end quote, was based on a forgery, Congress would vote yes. The war could then be waged and won. In recent weeks, administration officials have begun spreading the word that Cheney was never told that the Iraq-Niger story was based on a forgery. I asked a senior official who recently served at the National Security Council if he thought it was possible that that could have happened. He pointed out that rigorous NSC procedures call for a very specific response to all vice presidential questions, and he added that, quote, the fact that Cheney's office had originally asked that the Iraq-Niger report be checked out makes it inconceivable that his office would not have been informed of the results. Did the president himself know that the information used to secure congressional approval for war was based on a forgery? We don't know. But which would be worse, that he knew or that he didn't?
Ray McGovern, spokesperson for Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.